So you decided you were going to shave my head without actually telling me first?
Tell him the original story.
So I drove up, because I was really close to him in Scotland, and I listened, I downloaded all the podcasts, and I listened to them,
you blasted them all
back to back for 6.5 hours straight. I didn't get out of the van.
But yeah, I was on the roof for the last 2 days and then, you know, burnt to fricking. That's why I got a twat tan.
Go. Oh, wait, stop, stop, stop.
Who's responsible for that?
Fill your boots.
Fill your boots. Every episode now in the new season, we are going to be giving away a unique product for everybody that's watching and listening. So if you are listening, you need to head over to the YouTube so you get more details over there. But this one is sponsored by V12 Footwear. Now, V12 Footwear, you know Band of Builders, Pete, charity. This particular boot is basically, they're going to donate £5 of every sale of this pair of boots. So if you want to get yourself some, we'll put a little link in on the comment section, Nath, correct? And we will also be giving away a pair of these. So if you want to win these, we just ask a random question and we need the best answer. So I think we're going to get either of you two to ask the question this week. So has anybody got a question you want to ask the guests?
Well, nothing like putting you on the spot, is there?
I know, yeah, just chuck me under the bus. But
I think, how many press-ups can you do without stopping and we'll film it?
Yeah, that's fine. That was a good one.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I reckon...
Three.
I reckon he's got 14 in him.
14?
Full proper press-ups.
Oh, mate, I'll gobble 14 in 10 minutes. So Pete's come up with a question.
After the podcast, Al is going to get on the deck and do some press-ups. How many press-ups with those scrawny little arms can he do without stopping? Winner, closest guess, wins the boots.
Happy? Right, okay, so we're here, season 3, episode 2, overall episode 22, just for Nathan being particular and anal about it, and we have another two fantastic guests, both called Mike or Michael, whatever you want to call them, but they're called Mike. And firstly, we have Mike from where?
Greenock Construction.
And we also have...
Michael from Tradify.
All the way from...
New Zealand.
And so. He got here before me.
And I think he
got 2 hours before
you. That should have been what it was. How early was somebody from New Zealand compared to Pete? But yeah, really excited to have you guys both on the show. I mean, especially you. You've come all the way from New Zealand. I was on the podcast with you a few weeks back. So I want to start with you. And what we tend to do is we go back in time. We sort of get your backstory, how you came to be and how you ended up like doing what it is that you do. So just give us a little bit of background story about you first personally, and then also about, you know, like the fantastic brand that you're creating and, you know, sort of really champion that, and tell us a bit about how that came to be as well.
So I've come from New Zealand, but originally spent most of my life in the UK, born in Shepherd's Bush in London, grew up in Watford, or just outside of Watford. And most of my career has been in tech companies. So probably since about 2000, I joined what was MSN, for those that remember MSN in the day.
MSN Messenger. Yeah. I flirted with many a girl on there.
And then I ran AOL's business for a couple of years and did another couple of startups, and then joined Tradify. Moved to New Zealand in 2019. My wife's originally from New Zealand. We've got three kids and we just thought, let's give it a go. We'd been living in the US for about 4 years before that. I met the Curtis, who founded Tradify about 10 years ago. Mm. We kind of hit it off. I really liked the business, could see it was a real big problem in the industry that people weren't using stuff like that, and jumped in as CEO probably about 2 years ago. I was on the board just before that.
When have you gone to college, you've left college, tech was always what it was that you were that
it probably wasn't as linear as that. So I went to University of Sussex for a few years, did a degree in politics, Fortsworth, and
on an important day today when the PM resigns,
I probably wanted to be a journalist originally, actually. And so I sort of didn't really make the effort to kind of write for anyone or do any of that stuff. Left university, met some people in publishing. They're like, yeah, look, you're not going to you'd have to work at the Watford Observer or something first. And I was kind of like, oh, if I want to do that, really start from the bottom. And I was keen to make money. So I actually took a media sales job selling sort of space in a magazine. And that was kind of my first job. And I sort of fell into that and stayed in that industry. And then probably around... yeah, 1999, I just was sort of doing that job and thought, actually, the internet thing was starting to happen. I could see it. It intrigued me. I wanted to broaden my horizons a bit. And yeah, when I met Microsoft, there was a great job there and sort of jumped in.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, because I actually used to work in like selling advertising space back in the day for a company called SPG Media. They're actually based in London. And I look at like how I ended up here.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, how do you suddenly decide then that you that tech's what it was for you? I mean, if you've studied politics, because I mean, I've studied sound engineering and then I've ended up basically selling and developing torches. So it's sort of like, I always am intrigued by how somebody goes from there to there. What was, like, I know obviously you can see tech's coming and then you've gone to Microsoft and then you've, you know, what was your role in Microsoft? What types of things were you doing?
Yeah, still initially sales. And I think it was probably a couple of things. One, I like to be learning new things. Mm. That was part of it. And I was like, I don't know this industry. I'm going to learn a lot of stuff. And it's sort of an odd thing to say, but I've always loved new stuff, like electronic music. Yeah. You know, when hip hop was a thing, I really got into it. When house music became a thing, I got into it very early. And so I've always had that sort of wanting to be at the forefront of stuff as much as I could. And so I just saw it happening. I think it'd be a great thing. Thought it would change my career, which it did, not in the way I expected at the time. And it was partly Microsoft. It was a big brand, big company, big tech company. I thought, well, great, I can join a great company like that and maybe there'll be room to do other stuff outside of just sales, which is kind of where I ended up.
Yeah. I mean, did you ever look at the role that you were doing and think, maybe I want to go more into the development side, so like a bit like what Nathan does, like all the tech side, or was it just purely primarily like the business, the sales side? Was that...
I think I've always had an interest in the product side. I do like strong opinions about products, but I also knew that, you know, for me to go and be sort of actually be a, like a developer, say, would be a whole new kind of start from scratch. It probably isn't my skill set. Like, I knew where my skill set was, and it was on the kind of building businesses and leading teams and that type of stuff. So I sort of really heavily weighted myself towards that.
Yeah. So you go and do... Yeah, Microsoft, you go and do your AOL. Was AOL based in the US as well?
It was based here, but yeah, headquartered in the US.
Yeah. So you go and do those, and then you meet, who's the guy that created Tradify with you?
Curtis.
Yeah, so you meet Curtis, and what was the conversation around that? So how did that sort of come about?
Yeah, so we'd just moved to New Zealand, and I kind of met the chairman of the board of Tradify, and I was like, look, I've moved here, don't know what I want to do, but, you know, definitely want to stay in tech. And he said, look, you should meet Curtis, Tradify, you might better help them. So I met Curtis, we got on quite well. I spent a bit of time looking at the business and sort of saying, hey, look, if I was you, here's some things I would think about for growth. And the UK was a really important part of that story. So then I jumped in on the board. So I was, you know, actively involved in the company and looking at how we grow the business and where do we focus. But Curtis was still really running the business. And then probably about a year into that, it was actually during the lockdown, the first lockdown, April 2020, you know, I was on a video call with Curtis and he just said, look, I'm ready to sort of step back a bit and feel like I should hand the reins over to someone else. And I think you've got the right skill set. And I just sort of, I jumped at it.
Yeah. I mean, was that difficult, like the conversation around that, where obviously Gymshark was just based just down the road. And that was a similar thing where he was a young guy. He built this business up and then he got somebody else in because he felt that they would be better as CEO. I mean, like, I look at the types of things that I do here and I'm actually better at certain things than...
Right.
Than other things. So at some point you have to sort of take a step back and go, well, actually, I think you'd be better at doing, I don't know, like the more business side, and I'm better at doing the product development side. Does Curtis still, is he still active within the business, or is
Curtis is still on the board, but he did step back. Look, he's a super smart guy, really humble, and just decided, look, this is the right time to, and, you know, he knew me. I think it was one of those situations where it wasn't a, let's go and find a CEO and, find someone else. I think that would have been the plan, but, we knew each other and it was a good fit.
Yeah. Okay.
So was Curtis, when he started it, was he a tradesman?
He was an electrical engineer.
Right. Okay.
And that's pretty much, you know, a classical startup story. He saw the problem.
Yeah.
He experienced it himself and said, right, I'm going to create something. And look, I said, he's a super smart guy. He taught himself to code, built the initial product, grew it from there, and then hired people, and the rest is history.
Yeah. Because when we spoke to Charlie Mullins, that's one thing I always take from him. He said that obviously he runs his own plumbing and heating. Well, he used to be the biggest plumbing and heating firm in the UK. He only started to get big once he realised that he couldn't do everything himself.
Yeah.
So the bits he wasn't good at, employ someone who is good at it, and you can concentrate on what you're good at, and that's the way to grow a business.
Mm, definitely. So, such the right thing to do. I mean, like for us, we...
I'm not very good with all the banking side of things, and I like just grafting, always have been. Steve's amazing at it, my business partner. So it is 100% just give people that role, because, you know, well, if you want your bills paid, ring Steve, don't ring me, because there's no point. Yeah. You know, and it's and it's taking that step back, isn't it, that's important.
So at the point you joined, Curtis has had the idea, he's come up with an app, he's already running a Tradeify.
He's been running for 10 years by this point. Yeah. So the business is pretty well established in, you know, Australia. We've got customers in the UK. It's fairly well established.
Yeah. And he was looking to step back. Was it that to get back into his original job or?
No, I think you'd have to ask him, to be honest. But like, I think he just wanted to, you know, he'd been at it for 10 years. And he just wanted to step back and thought it was the right time to have someone focused on kind of the next stage of the company.
And then you've joined the team. So what was your role, CEO, but was your role to grow, expand?
Yeah. I mean, I think I've focused on a few things. One was we wanted to increase the size of the team, especially in product and engineering. We really want to invest in building the best product and doing stuff for our customers that we knew they were demanding over time, that we hadn't necessarily met all of those demands because of the size of the team. So we invested pretty heavily in building out the number of engineers we have and the product. And then the other side was building out local teams, like having a pretty decent sized team in the UK to service our UK customers and growth.
Because I was thinking about, you know, when you make an app, when you first make it, that's because you've had an idea, you think, right, there's a problem, I need a solution, I'm going to make this app. And in my head, I was thinking, so your plan would be to perfect the original idea, get that perfect, and once you're happy with that, is your next step add something to it? So because I know when I started using Tradeify, pretty soon after I started using it, they introduced certificates, so forms that I can do. So is that the way you're taking things at the minute? You've perfected the base package, which is Tradeify, and now you're adding stuff to bring more value to people that use it?
I think we're probably always iterating on the core product, right? So it's never going to be where it needs to be, because technology changes.
Yeah, nothing can ever change, be perfect, can it?
Always, so fast.
Yeah. So things like just the user interface, what you do on mobile, we're always investing in, can that be improved? And we do things there. We'll upgrade core features that we think need upgrading, like we're doing our scheduler at the moment. And then the short answer is there are other things that we think we can do to solve problems for tradespeople. Mm-hmm. One is, for example, websites. We just launched a website product. Lots of tradespeople either don't have a website, or they're paying too much money for a website, or they've got a website that's not very good. And so, you know, you can turn on a website with us tomorrow. We've already got photography, we've got your brand name, we've got your logo, and we just create that for you, and that, you know, is part of your package. And then the inquiries go straight into that website, and it all kind of works seamlessly together. So so over time, the focus is still really make sure we've got the core product is the best that it can be for our customers. And then build out additional features like websites is a good example.
What I liked was when I did my, what we call it, an induction, where I spoke to one of your tech team and they explain, because, you know, when you get an app, or even when you get like a new phone or a new piece of technology, if you don't know the full capabilities of it, you're probably only using 10% of what it can do. So what I liked was they explained that, and whatever I needed from it, they showed me.
The customer service is wicked, isn't it, with Tradeify?
Yeah.
It really, really is. I mean,
he can come again.
He's planted him.
I think we got this sold. But no, it's really good. I mean, you were obviously about the web stuff as well. It's like, well, we just have...
Before you go into that, what I'm going to get you to do is, if you, because we haven't actually asked you what it is, what it solves, and sort of give us a bit of background story, because I know I can get the other flip side, from you, because I know that you use it, but also from you as well. So you'll get different takes, because you're a plumber and you're a Sparky, so you're going to get two different takes here. So just for anybody listening or watching, if you've been interested in Tradeify or looking at it and thinking, how's it going to help me? Well, you're going to get it from the horse's mouth, so you're going to get the CEO telling you what it's going to solve, and then you'll get two active tradespeople that will give you a real in-depth view of what they think from using it and how it affects their business. So...
Yeah, so principally the mission of the company is to, you know, the catchphrase we used to use is help tradespeople get their lives back. And so what we saw in the market was most trades, we were a plumber, electrician, you know, whatever trade you're in, builder, landscaper, spending anywhere from sort of 15 to 20 hours a month on paperwork. I use that term generally, but back office type stuff. And that can be anything from creating a quote for a customer, emailing the quote, managing the job, if you've got a workforce, timesheets, all that type of stuff, job photography, right through to the final invoice, right through to payment. And principally, Tradeify is a tool that solves all those back office admin things that you need to do from the moment you speak to a customer right through to the moment you get paid from, by that customer. And that's really the problem we've tried to solve. Pretty much in an app that can be used on mobile, so you can do all of that stuff on the phone, or you can do it on an iPad or desktop, whatever is your preference. Yeah.
I mean, I don't use it myself. One thing I was going to ask, which I would think in my head, is from talking to everybody that comes on here, getting paid is a hard part. Is that something that it can link up with?
Like yeah, we Sage link up with Stripe. Yeah, we link up with Stripe. We connect it to Sage or Xero if you use that as accountancy software. Yeah. You know, one of the things we see, you know, one of the issues, if you're not using software, then, you know, you're chasing customers, you're wasting time phoning, texting, trying to get a customer to pay you. You know, we have an automated invoice feature, right? The invoice goes out, customer doesn't open it or doesn't pay it. You know, they'll get another email 3 days later saying, hey, prompted, you haven't paid this invoice. And that just saves a ton of time. But more importantly, it helps manage cash flow, which I think this year will become more important. Yeah. Particularly when you look at supplies, we manage suppliers as well and costings and all those types of things. That actually will become more important to I think, the health of trades businesses.
Yeah. So I'll keep it short and I'll keep it sweet. As you can see, I've got one of these lovely Bisley Workwear t-shirts on here. They're our good friends, our main headline sponsor. And just to show some appreciation for the real good quality workwear that these guys do, they've given us a 15% off discount code. So if you click here, it'll take you straight through. So if you're interested in some decent workwear gear, Bisley's got you covered. So we'll come over to you then now. So take us back to how you first came to be in the trade and give us a little bit of background story, because we know obviously your company does all sorts of stuff, but... You know, what is it you do, and how did that come to be with what you are now?
Well, not many people know that I wasn't actually in the construction industry at all originally. I was not the academic type, should we say, at school, written off pretty early, which I think most tradesmen are, aren't they, you know. But
You didn't study politics?
No, I didn't. My outlook from my teachers was it was either jail or early death, was what they told my dad.
Was it like, jail or early death? Yeah. What did you do at school?
Yeah, what's the jail? Talk us through the jail thing.
Well, you know, that's, thanks. You know, bit like that, really.
Pinch you by name.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, cheers, thanks.
Sam the carpenter we had on, and he said his teacher said he'll never make a carpenter. He gave her the finger, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what? It's ridiculous, because the French teacher, oh my God, she's just... You know, when you're teachers, you're supposed to be there to mentor people, aren't you? You know,
I think some teachers, though, they end up in the profession because they've tried to do something else, and they weren't very good at it, and then they've gone to school to do it. And this isn't saying all teachers are like that, but I just think some, and then they just resent the fact that they're there, and then, you know, a pupil.
I think it's a hard job. I would say that. I mean, I've got three kids, and I see, you know,
My dad was deputy head at one of the schools.
And it was in the jail.
Do you know what? When one of the schools...
Go up to him and tell him he's going to end up in jail because he's a shitter.
Do you know what?
I would say the difference is because you can have a teacher, but then you can have a good teacher that inspires you.
That's definitely what happened to me. Definitely. I mean, like I said, I never went to the same schools as my dad. That was made very clear from my dad, that you will not go to any of my schools. And I was like, yeah, that's sweet. I don't want you spoiling my fun. I fell through the system. I found out later in my early 30s I'm dyslexic, and you know, it's all those things where you're just a naughty kid and all the rest of it. And then it was actually the rugby coach, because it's quite a big rugby school. He said, look, mate, you're always angry at the world. I don't really understand what's going on. You come in to play rugby. And I was like, yeah, I don't know about this. So I went and played rugby for them, and then he put me as a back, because I was only small. I'm not exactly massive now. And he said, how'd you find that, Mike? And I said, it's crap, mate. He says, what do you mean? I says, oh, I'm just not getting stuck in enough. It's rubbish. And he says, right, okay, well, you need to, where do you want to be? He says, I want to be a forward. And he just laughed at me. He says, you, a forward? You're tiny. I went, let me worry about that. And he says, what position do you want to play? And I says, flanker. He goes, why? And I says, because I'm not listening to you. I'm not listening to any of the rules. I don't care. Whoever's got that ball, they're having it. And that was it. And
I was waiting for you to go. And the first game I played,
bang, nailed.
Yeah, I got nailed, and I'll be honest with
you. I used to go and play, and it was literally, so I'd go on the pitch and I'd be like, oh my God, I'm shitting myself here. These lads are going to smash me. First big tackle that somebody made on me and hurt me, it was like, game on. This is happening. Mm. And it was just great. And then
Are you a member of Fight Club?
No.
He couldn't tell you if he was.
Yeah. No, you're not allowed.
First rule of Fight Club is we don't talk about Fight Club.
Just members keep going up. Yeah. But no, it was... So it's hard really to talk about when you look back now, but there's a teacher there that was a maths teacher, because it was a rough school and they kept rattling through teachers all the time, and a new maths teacher came in and he said, look, what are you doing in this class? And I was like, oh, I don't know, where do you want me to go? Am I supposed to be out of here? And he said, look, you're too clever for in here. I don't know why you're in this class. And he was the only one, Mr. Bishop, his name was. He was a really, really nice guy. And he said to me, look, I'm going to get you to do the intermediate GCSE paper. And for all you young kids out there, that is in the old days. But he said, if you can get half of that right, I'll private tutor you, so at least you can get your maths. And I just couldn't do it. And I shook his hand and I went, right, I'm only coming here to play rugby. And that's it. And I went and got a job. Mm. I literally used to turn up on my moped at the bottom of the training ground, get changed as I was running up, straight in. And the coaches used to go, what the hell are you doing? Like, you shouldn't be doing this. And he's like, well, do you want me to play or not? Yeah, go on then. And that's how it was. And then I left and went into the motor trade, family-run business. And I went and did that and then loved it to a degree, then outgrew the Backstreet
Garage.
What
were you doing in the motor trade? Were you a mechanic?
Mechanic, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, mechanic. And then I went
in... I was going to say stealing cars.
Yeah, cutting and shutting cars was my speciality. No, it was, just a mechanic, Backstreet Garage. And then they also owned a body shop as well. So... I used to go over there and work at, you know, repairing cars as well that way. And then I went into main dealers after that. That's how I met my wife, basically. She was a service advisor and I just hounded her, really. So she had no choice. So that's how we got together. And then I was a master tech at 21. So once you get to that point, you can't get a hire. The next thing after that is your workshop controller. And it was like, oh, this is boring. So I specialised in fault diagnostics. And then I retrained and did an intensive course, which is massively frowned upon these days, and it is. But my course was a little bit longer than what, like now I get people saying, oh, I'm doing a 4-week course and I'm fully qualified. I'm like,
that's a Bundy 10 course, that is.
Yeah, it's impossible, you know. But I was very lucky. I wouldn't recommend doing it this way at all. But you got to think, I just bought my house. My daughter was just about to be born and stuff. And and it was just, and then my father-in-law just got diagnosed with cancer and stuff like that. So there was a lot going on. There was just a lot riding on it. So I was like, listen, I've got to do this. And then my neighbour, he was actually a Sparky from day one. And he sort of took me under his wing. You know, I had almost like a mentor, I suppose. Mm. And we used to swap days. So I'd do like 3 days with him and, you know, he'd do 2 days, you know, that sort of, rather than exchanging any money, it was doing it that way.
If the enamored of you were watching this, he didn't just say that.
I say what I like. But, you know.
Prove it.
Yeah, long time ago now, Flower, long time. But yeah, it was just, without a mentor, it would have been an absolute nightmare. Yeah.
I think you say the fast track courses are frowned upon, but if you want to be an electrician or plumber and you're of a certain age, apprenticeship's not going to be available to you. So the only route in is going to be a fast track. You just got to be prepared that when you've done it and you've got a qualification, you're not really qualified. You need to get experience after that. So
it's so much harder.
It's like gold dust.
You have to keep going. Like even now, like, so we've got apprentices, and Jack, my apprentice, he's been with me 18 months, but he just quit on Sunday. A bit out of the blue, but he's been making a few mistakes and he's had his first, disciplinary as such, and he's just basically just walked. But since having Jack, it's made me realise that I need to, you know, up my game as well. It's all very well me standing here as an employer then going, you need to learn this, you need to learn that, you need to learn something else, without me stepping forward and going, well, actually, why shouldn't I do that? And because of like anxiety issues, things like that, I've always just gone, oh, I can't do that, I can't do that. And I've now actually push myself to do more and more. Mm. So in the last few years, I've done more qualifications than I've done ever. Mm. And it's just from putting yourself out there.
It's difficult as well, because obviously the scenario when you do take on an apprentice is you've been used to it being you, or you've worked with somebody else and you've just relied on yourself. And then like here, I never used to know how to manage people. That in itself is like a challenge. So if you bring somebody else in, you've now got to get the job done, but then you've got to also pass on that knowledge and try and do it in a normal way with that person.
It's really difficult. It is really difficult. And also to let go is to go, oh, get them to do that.
No comments from you guys when you said let go. Thank you.
You just have to, but you do have to step back and go, well, if they're not actually hands-on, and that's what we've tried to do with all of our apprentices, because we've got Lewis is now fully qualified. So we bought him his new van, and, you know, there's a bit of a, like, congratulations, you've passed, you know, all this sort of stuff. So we bought him a new van, and it's loaded his van out with gear and stuff as well. And it was a bit like, come on now, you now need to do the what we'd call a semi-skilled, you know, so you've got to step up a little bit more. And then Kian's just about, he's a bricklaying apprentice. He's going to qualify this year. Kian, you're not getting a van, by the way. We can't buy vans like they're going like confetti, but you know, it'll be looked after. But it's having that journey, isn't it? And then obviously we try and run it so everyone stays with us. That's what we want. We want long term, not lads to just come in and do a bit and go, because I'll be honest with you, that really annoy me, because they do slow you down. You're trying to give over your knowledge, and this is why I'm a little bit disappointed with Jack, because he could be an amazing Sparky. He really could. He's just got it, but he's just heads and us not in it. And he's just, well, whatever.
So do you think, is he left the trade, or is he left to go and work for someone else, do you think?
I believe he's left the trade from what, because his best mate works for us as well.
Right.
The difficulty is we've sort of caught them out. They've been on a lad's holiday as well, and the flight got cancelled, but they forgot about the internet that you can check all these things. So it was one of the final straws of really having that meeting with him. So look, this is not good enough, and it's just, you know.
I think when you're young, though, I mean, the amount of times that I used excuses and stuff like that, and it's not until you actually get a mortgage or you've got a kid on the way that you actually sit there and think, shit, I need to sort myself out. Because the amount of times
The annoying thing is that the time before, literally the day before he was due to fly, it was just me and Jack doing some plastered in LED profile. And it's a two-person job. And he hadn't got his passport yet. He'd been trying to get it for ages and it just wasn't happening. So I made him go to Peterborough to go and get it. Mm. And he was like, are you sure? And I'm like, yeah, because you're going to miss your holiday. Just go and get it sorted. So he's done that, and then obviously tried to pull a fast one. I mean, you know, you think, come on, that's, and we're a really open company, so we, you know, so I'd rather have had the respect a lot. We've just got a bit carried away, still absolutely hammered, and there's no way I'm going to be fit for work. Yeah, okay, that's fine. I understand. We've all been there. You know, I get it. But to do that, he left. We didn't sack him. He just left. So there was mention of him, he wants to be a copper or something, but if he can't handle a little bit of criticism, I think he's going to struggle a little bit.
If he can't get back on a flight, he's going to struggle.
Yeah.
I couldn't do anything like that when I was apprentice because...
It was your dad.
Your flight's
been cancelled. Bollocks, you're in your room.
Yeah. One weekend, I dislocated my ankle playing football. It's on the Sunday morning, all day at hospital on the Sunday. Got it popped back in. My foot was black. You know, the bruise was
Monday
just,
morning, you're in the vet.
Made me go work. So I had to watch Kev work.
So, as you know, myself and Pete, we always want to try and give back to the people that watch and listen to the show. So we've done you an absolute solid. We've got loads of discounts from top name brands all across the internet. So if you want to save some money on tools, software, tool bags, accessories, then go and check out our discount page, which is just located here. Hopefully there's a saving on there for you. And that's a little bit of a thank you from myself and Pete for supporting the channel. So what's the future plans then for your business? What are you sort of looking to do? Because you're talking about you've got apprentices, they're going to qualify. Is the thing to keep taking apprentices on and slowly build it out from there? Is that what you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we try and keep it that way. I'm not getting any younger. I'm the youngest of the directors, and we're trying to look at it as going right. The Greenhawks, it's not a massive company, but it's probably one of the biggest in our local area. Mm. And trying to build that up slowly but surely is probably better than... I mean, we could flood our company with lads, but the quality is going to fall. So that's kind of what we're doing. So I think initially we're just going to keep going as we are. But we all love being on the tools. And I think that's something that's, until we stop loving it, then you're going to have to sort of let go again. And like I say, get more people in who to, you know, to take over that. But I literally wake up every morning and look forward to going to work, you know, which I never did before.
That's the dream.
You know, and that's why I tell my kids the same. If you can do a job and you literally get out of bed and you look forward to going, it doesn't matter what it pays, you've got the best job in the world.
Mm. Yeah. You know?
What are you?
I have to come and do this.
Easiest job in the world. Gets paid loads of money. Just dosses around the office all day.
Is he talking about himself?
TikToking it up.
He's talking about himself here, isn't he?
Because Ann gets his hair cut whenever he wants.
Fucking, come on.
Drives to Starbucks every other
come
hour.
Come on. I, do you know what I am?
Flat
white. Do you know what I am? I'm just the runner for you to go and get your food. When he comes here, he goes, can you get me a coconut water, a grenade bar? Can you get me some sushi?
You just mentioned YouTube. So you got a YouTube channel. Is that something you've got into recently or?
Yeah, kind of. Well, I suffer with mental health, right? I'm not going to lie about it. I'm very open about it. I do a lot of other podcasts about it, and I won't go on a podcast unless I am allowed to talk about it. I started YouTube basically in the first lockdown because I was struggling like hell, going from working like 12, 13 hour days to you got to stay at home is a big deal. So the first video I made was actually just on my phone at 12 o'clock at night. I wasn't sleeping, wasn't eating properly, panic attacks, that sort of thing. And I just went in the garage. I must have seemed like, all right, Fruit Loop, confirm my neighbours, like pressing the garage door, 12 o'clock, right? Jesus, what's Mike doing now?
Probably thought you had a stolen car.
Yeah, just, oh Jesus, what's he up to now? But yeah, I just recorded my feelings and then I've never put that out, but it sort of opened my eyes a little bit, and then I just started making more and more videos, and I don't do it for anyone else other than me. And it was, and initially I was smashing out like 4 videos a week because I needed, if I let myself have 10 minutes of free time, it really became a problem, and that's quite dangerous. So I was literally just rattling videos out about anything, really, all electrical based, really, because that's what the main videos are on our YouTube channel. And then it just sort of snowballed, and I really enjoy it, and this is what's led me to doing all this and just fully embrace the socials and stuff. But before lockdown I was literally like a dinosaur, never been on Instagram, never been on Facebook, YouTube, nothing. And it's just, but it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because it's for every 100 great comment you get one negative one, and it's that one that you remember. But I've got some really great followers now, and there was one guy who was saying, oh, you're not a real Sparky because you're only, all my old stuff was all domestic installer. I only do domestic work, so I don't need anything else, but I've been registered with them for like 13, 14 years. And it really annoyed me, and it triggered me. So I just basically went, right, okay, I'm just going to get my reassessment done and move it up to approved contract so I can do literally everything. And it was only, I had all the livery changed on the van. Just because of one comment. Yeah. Wow. And it was just more like, shut your face. Don't tell me that I'm something I'm not. And that was it, basically. I just did that. And that's how I got into doing YouTube. And I film most days. It's been hard at the minute because I've been like rattling around from one job to the next and all the rest of it. So I find it hard. But it's really odd because you kind of like, get so used to going, right, film today, right, I'll get in, I'll upload that, and then when my kids are gone to bed, I'll then start editing and all the rest of it. So you get out of that groove, and then you start thinking, oh, so then your mental health starts playing up. And it's not, don't get me wrong, YouTube is not the answer for everything, but for me, it's helped.
Well, I can relate to it because I suffer with my mental health, and I need something, a goal to aim towards to keep my mind busy. Yeah. So obviously for you, it's YouTube, being creative, make outlet for your feelings, whatever. But that's your way of coping
with it. For him, he signed up to every fucking marathon game.
Yeah, I know. Do you know
the
what?
Running man.
It's ridiculous. I follow Pete and he's like, Jesus Christ, he's just done another run. I'm thinking, oh, I really need to sort myself out.
I did 6 miles this morning, right?
Right.
And it's an easy 6 miles. So you just have to, the rule is 80.
Easy 6 miles.
Yeah.
Now prepare to be bored by some running stats.
Oh, it used to be cold showers, so at least it's running now.
I'm still doing the cold showers. 80-20, so 80% of your runs you run a slow, steady pace, the way you could have a conversation with someone. And then 20% is like hill running, tempo, speed running, whatever. I don't like running. It's boring. But because I've now got a goal where I want to do these three marathons.
Right, okay.
And because I've got a training plan where it says I've got to run Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
I am now looking forward to my next run. Like, my next run's on Saturday. I'm looking forward to it already. I'm doing a half marathon on Sunday. I'm looking forward to it. Before, I hated running because it's so boring. But because I've got a goal, it's perfect for me. That's what that's what I thrive on.
Oh, that's interesting, Now, I love running, but not just the actual zoning out.
You can tell I don't like running.
Yeah. I mean, so obviously, we've got four chaps sat around the table and two of us suffering from mental health. So it just, if you're watching this at home and you're going through it, and you know, lots of people go through it, 50% of the people.
100%. I think the biggest thing to do, and this is why obviously on all podcasts I mention it, and I don't think it's nothing to be ashamed of. I mean, there's different varying levels of it, obviously for obvious reasons, but
we had Rob from
My mental health podcast. Yeah, because I've just done a podcast with Rob, you know, and it's and it was just a one-on-one about some of the stuff that's, you know, I've struggled with in life, you know, losing my father-in-law at a young age to cancer and stuff, and I nursed him and I didn't want anyone else to do it. And I was saying that it's sad because my wife's an only child, and we just had my daughter. She was 4 months old, and my father-in-law passed away on our first wedding anniversary. And I remember when he passed away, I was there till he took his last breath. We had carers and stuff that used to come, but I used to send them away. I didn't want them there. I just wanted to do it out of respect. So I stopped working. I couldn't care if I lost the house and really didn't give a monkeys. And I moved back in for the last sort of few months of his life. I actually broke him out of hospital as well because they wanted to keep him in, but he didn't want to die there. So I nicked a wheelchair and got him out. You know, it was quite funny with his arse hanging out. Yeah, good times. So basically, when people used to come round, obviously the second he passed away, loads of people come round because they didn't want anyone else. My father-in-law didn't want people to see him in that way because he was a big guy, you know, before, and he obviously, as we all know, his cancer and stuff, it sort of eats you away. And he stopped people seeing him probably the last 6 months of his life, something like that. And he was about 18 stone originally, and he got down to about 8 stone. He used to have to carry him downstairs.
Mm.
And when he died, everyone was coming around and consoling my wife and my mother-in-law. Nobody ever asked me if I was all right. And it's always played on my mind, you know, thinking, well, what about me? I was there when he took his last breath. You weren't, you know, and it was just those sort of things that just sort of triggers things off. And then I went into a few things over a few weeks. I ordered a new superbike 2 days after he died. And because I was watching MotoGP like 24/7, and that was a stupid thing to do. I thought, you know, I cancelled the order. Honda were amazing, by the way. With that, they just thought, yeah, this guy's nuts. So we don't really need to let him out on that. Talking about it is the biggest thing you can do, definitely.
So, ladies and gents, tradesmen and women, I am trying to help you organise yourself. So we have teamed up with Tradeify, which is a software brand that if you are struggling to get organised, to look after your customers and to get everything ready for the jobs that you are going to need, then Tradeify is an all-in-one solution. So we've teamed up with those guys. If you click this little link just up here, you get 50% off your first 3 month subscription, and you also can have a 14-day free trial.
Right, guys, so final thought. You can plug your Instagram, YouTube channel, your company, or you can pass on a gem of advice that's helped you in your career that you think the guys watching would benefit from.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you can follow us on the socials if you want to, you know, that's great. But I think for me is, if you're an apprentice, make sure that you are asking absolutely as many questions as you can, because let's face it, you're not. No question is stupid, but also more importantly, any other than that, that if you are suffering with mental health, is just don't suffer in silence, just speak out. And if you are a tradesman, because we do live in that society of man up, isn't it? It's that a really annoying thing. But if you think that one of your friends or colleagues or something like that is struggling, make sure you actually check in on them, because one day they might not actually be there. So.
What about you then, mate?
Yeah,
future plans for Tradeify, anything you want to
Oh, I'd just say, look, I'd say start a free trial if you want to. Mm. We have a team that can help. I think sometimes people are intimidated by software and don't want to use it because it seems hard. And, you know, be patient, test it. On the career side, I mean, interestingly, I think if you're an apprentice, you know, one of the things that really helped me in my career is having mentors, having someone that you could talk to who has already had lots of experience. I think when you're younger, you're a bit impatient. You think you know everything. And sometimes you need to talk to someone who says, no, you
still
don't yet.
Now.
You don't yet. You know, and they've got some pattern recognition. They've seen things before. I think finding that person, whether it's, you know, in your own business or in someone else's business, yeah, is really, really useful. Mm. It's a good person you can sort of speak kind of off the record, get advice, those types of things. So it doesn't even have to be someone that's in the trade necessarily. I think having that person is, sometimes it's a family member, but it's important, someone you respect.
Yeah, it's good advice.
I think what we get from everyone when they talk about apprentices, you got to be keen. So asking questions and actually look like you're eager to learn rather than just stand there.
Do you know what? The worst thing you can do as an apprentice, right, is just stand there, not bothering, look dopey as hell, because your day will drag. It will drag so much. Even if you're the
bit of enthusiasm, guys. Yeah, obviously, like you say, your day will go a lot faster if you're grafting.
Yeah, even if you're just cleaning up.
3 o'clock already. Let's have a cup of tea and go home.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
Last one, guys.
Thank you very much for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having us. Yeah.
Thank
you.
We really appreciate it. Thank you.
If you like listening to Al talk over all the guests. If you've enjoyed this episode of Trade Legends, listening to Al talk over everybody else and people banging on the desk. If you've enjoyed listening to and watching today, you're fucking going to just stay still one space just for a minute.
If you've enjoyed watching this, blah, 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 blah. Okay, right, just, 3, 2, 1, go.
So I'll just not do it. Yeah, sure. I'm going to shut up for just like a minute. If you've enjoyed listening and watching today's Trade Legends podcast, please subscribe to our channel. It'll really help us out. We're a new podcast. We want to do big things. And you subscribing, hitting the little bell so you get notifications, be just great. Thank you.
Hitting the little bell? I was like, ah, yeah, ding, 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 ding.
There is a little bell in there.